Okay, so the title of my talk today, Canopy Temperatures in Irrigated and Non-Irrigated Maize. I have a co-author, Stephen Shaw from SUNY ESF, and Jeff Melkonian from the School of Integrated Plant Science at Cornell. I want to start by giving you all just a little background on what got us motivated to do some of this work. In 2011, there was an article in Science by Lobel and Schlenker basically saying that using NAS data, they had taken statistical models and using air temperature and NAS data for corn and soybean yields, they claimed that there was very strong evidence that high temperatures were already causing decreases in maize yield across the United States. However, there was some people who wrote in with some objections to some of the way that they had conducted the study. Part of the issue was that they didn't make much note of the interaction of high temperature with moisture stress, which most of us in the ag world realize are usually highly correlated. So we thought we would take time to reanalyze some of the NAS data with temperature data that was available. But also, we wanted to address moisture availability as a variable. And so we assessed the effect of daily maximum air temperature on irrigated and rain-fed maize yields in 100 counties. This was a period of 1981 to 2011, and it was in the Midwest and Great Plains. So this is just showing you some results from that study. On the left-hand side is a county, Livingston, in Illinois, where you see rain-fed maize. And on the right-hand side is an irrigated county in Nebraska. On the y-axis, we're looking at yield anomalies and bushels per acre over this 20-year period. And on the x-axis are killing degree day anomalies. Those are days in which the maximum air temperature have gone above 29 degrees C. And we've sorted these by, you know, low growing degree days, medium growing degree days, and high growing degree days over the course of the season. What you can see is that the irrigated maize yields on the right-hand side had minimal dependency on high air temperature. It really was difficult to see. This is a one county example, but of the 35 counties we did, there was essentially very little of the variability in yield could be explained by KDDs or other air temperature indexes. On the left-hand side, the rain-fed, there was some suggestion that that there may be a decrease in yield with increases in high temperatures, but I pointed out two dates here, 1983 and 1988, which were extreme drought years in the Midwest, so you can see that really strengthens this relationship. So so we thought it's a more complicated story maybe than what was initially being published, and so we started to look into this more carefully. We particularly wanted to use irrigated maize as a control for water stress, to say, okay, let's look at temperatures, air temperatures, where we have irrigated maize versus non-irrigated maize. Can we do that? And if we don't see a signal in the irrigated maize, does that show, hey, most of what we're seeing in the rain-fed maize is really a water stress response, and we're really looking at the correlation between water stress and high air temperatures. So questions that I'm going to try and address here, can irrigated maize be compared to rain-fed maize to separate water stress from the direct impacts of high air temperatures on yield? And you'll see, I think there's going to be problems doing that. And that brings us to the second question. Since the canopy temperature is arguably the more relevant factor than the air temperature for calculating the impact of high temperatures on crop yields, can we estimate the canopy temperature in irrigated and rain-fed crops? And I'm going to address in this talk is, can we predict the difference between the canopy and the air temperature, or what I abbreviate as delta T, from just knowing the vapor pressure deficit? And I'll go through a little bit on that. And the second thing I'm going to address is, can we use the Penman-Monteith equation to predict delta T, the difference between the air temperature and the canopy temperature? So that's what I'm getting at, with the idea that if we're going to run models, either simulation models or statistical models, in which we're using air temperature as a proxy for canopy temperature, how far off are we going to be? Is that really a legitimate approach? Okay, so this is work that was done a long time ago, 30 years, more than 30 years ago, by IDSO, and you're seeing on the y-axis, delta T, the difference between the foliage air temperature and the air temperature. On the x-axis is a vapor pressure deficit of the atmosphere. So what you can see in this line that goes down from close to zero to minus 12 degrees here, that when you have irrigated, this is for alfalfa, when you have irrigated crops and you have fairly high vapor pressure deficits, they're frequently below air temperature, okay? So, and as you increase the vapor pressure deficit, the air temperature, the canopy temperature is even going to be more negative relative to the air temperature, okay? So this has been known for quite some time. And at the same time, he put in when you had stressed alfalfa, you shouldn't be able to see any impact of air temperature on canopy temperature, just any impact of vapor pressure deficit on the difference between canopy temperature and air temperature. So that's this upper line. So you can kind of see in one case, under irrigated well-watered conditions, vapor pressure deficit is controlling the difference between canopy temperature and air temperature. And under water stress conditions, the vapor pressure deficit has apparently no impact. And this figure implies that you're kind of at a constant temperature. Okay, more recently, and I guess some talks were given, well, Ermac, I think, was at the meetings yesterday. He and others have published relationships with respect to the canopy that canopy temperature minus air temperature, delta T, as a function of vapor pressure deficit. And they've also reviewed a lot of studies. This is all for corn, non-water stressed corn. And you can see they show this general trend of decreasing canopy temperature relative to air temperature as you increase the vapor pressure deficit. But there's quite a spread there. So if we were going to say, oh, the air temperature is at 38 degrees, we have a vapor pressure deficit of 2, it'd be very hard to say how far above or below air temperature from looking at this set of lines the canopy actually is. Okay, so despite some knowledge of basic controls, there still is a fairly large discrepancy in the delta T relationship here. So first part, we want to look at this more carefully. So what we did and what the rest of the data I'm going to show you is from the Meade, Nebraska Mariflux Towers. And mainly 2010 to 2012, and particularly 2012 because Meade, Nebraska runs maize flux towers both for irrigated and non-irrigated maize. And they ran them simultaneously. In both situations, we're running 2012, which was a year in the Midwest where we had in semi-arid further west, we had very high temperatures. So this, I'm just showing you data that I've averaged on an hourly basis from 2010 to 2012, the energy fluxes, net rad, which is the orange line here, latent heat, and sensible heat loss, and then that dotted blue line is the vapor pressure deficit. Because to understand some of the variability in this delta T VPD relationship, you got to realize that delta T is changing over the day. So it will very much depend on when you measure the delta T. So what you can see is that most of the day, the latent heat loss is tracking the net rad, but by mid-afternoon, when the vapor pressure deficit, and this vapor pressure deficit curve would be very similar to the air temperature curve, when it's reaching its max, okay, then latent heat loss has already begun to decline because net radiation is beginning to decline. And so what you can see is then by 2 o'clock in the afternoon or so, sensible heat is actually no longer positive. We're not losing sensible heat from the canopy. There's advection. There's a downward transfer of heat from the atmosphere to the canopy. And so latent heat transfer actually exceeds net rad under these conditions. Okay, so this is all flux tower data. If you were at some of the instrumentation sessions this morning, I did account for energy balance inaccuracies on an hourly basis from the flux tower data because there's some big issues with that and the energy imbalance. Okay, then what I'm showing you here is from this is from 2012, the air temperature and the canopy temperature. And the red is the temperature of the canopy. If you see, it increases throughout the morning, but shortly after noon it begins to decrease, whereas the air temperature is still increasing. So what you can see, just looking at the red and blue line, is that the maximum air temperature is not the maximum canopy temperature. And in fact, probably if you were just doing for non-stress maize, if you're just trying to get an estimate of what's the maximum canopy temperature, one quick and dirty way would be just to say, well, what's the air temperature around noon? Because that's probably pretty close to what the maximum canopy temperature is going to be on average. But this little inset graph is a box plot of data showing the delta T's, the difference between the temperature of the canopy minus the temperature of the air as a function of the hour of the day. And you can see there's quite a spread. You can very distinctly see that the delta T's are greatest around mid-morning to very early afternoon, but till noon, and then they begin declining by 12:30, 1:30, or 13:30, they begin declining. So as the air temperature is going up, the difference between the air temperature and the canopy temperature is going down. Okay, so then that's kind of what you would expect from some of the work that has been previously done. So what we did, and I should say, we were getting these canopy temperatures by using the long wave emitted from the flux tower data, because the flux tower data includes long wave, generally they include long wave emitted, so we could calculate the canopy temperature. We were just looking when the canopy was closed and before it's senesced, so just a 40-day period. All right, so now this is a figure on the upper left-hand side of the delta T, is the difference between that we measured between, or that was measured in the flux tower data, between canopy temperature and air temperature as a function of the measured vapor pressure deficit. And you can see the general decline, which has been pointed out in the past by other researchers with those single lines. But you can actually see there's a lot of scatter around that line. And what I've shown here is some of that scatter is that you can attribute to net radiation. So right here, I'm just looking at what the delta T's are from 12:30 to 15:30 in the afternoon. But I'm looking at a range of different net radiation. And the lower the net radiation, the lower that delta T is going to be. The higher the delta T. And definitely, we can see there's a function of vapor pressure deficit. So you can, the graph below that is a scatter plot, looking at these differences in canopy versus air temperature as a function right to the right of VBD. So you can see it's very highly correlated with VBD and also with the latent heat to net radiation ratio, which you would expect. The higher the VBD, the more transpiration is going to occur before we kind of start thinking about what the stomates would be doing. The more transpiration is going to occur for a given level of net rad. Okay, so when we then take this data that you're seeing in the upper left-hand corner, we account for VPD, we account for net rad, and we try and put together a regression model, we can explain about 70% of the variability in the relationship between the canopy and air temperature and the predicted and measured values. So that's the upper right-hand corner is just on the X. Is the and the x-axis is what we predicted, and the y-axis is what we measured. So you can see we can account for some of that variability, although not all of it. But if you wanted to do a better job of predicting what canopy temperature was, you'd probably make sense to run some kind of regression like this on using VPD and NetRad from weather station data and air temperature to get at what you think delta T would be of the canopy. Could be at air temperature, it could be considerably below air temperature, as you can see from that scatter diagram. Okay, so that's kind of the simple approach to the irrigated maize. The next thing we did was we looked at rain-fed maize. As I said, in 2012, they were growing rain-fed maize with a flux tower data over it as well, so we could compare rain-fed and irrigated side-by-side for the same season. This is what the energy balance looks like. What you can see is there's a lot less latent heat loss going on than in the irrigated maize, which is what we would expect. The net rad is essentially the same, and so there's more sensible heat transfer. It peaks again around noon, but at the same time it begins to decline, and eventually, actually, the latent heat loss crosses over the net rad axis and actually exceeds it a little bit. So you see the same type of behavior, but not as extreme, because you're not getting as much latent heat loss. So if we look then at, in a rain-fed situation where the crop's under stress, what are the delta T's going to be? Here you can see what the average air temperature is. It's essentially the same as in 2012 over the irrigated, slightly higher, but not very much. And then the canopy temperature, which is much higher than the air temperature throughout the early part of the day, but at noon and all the way till the later part of the afternoon. So that little inset then, again, is looking at the delta T's and the variability. So you can see the general behavior, but you can also see there's a fair amount of wiggle room around the mean there. So the mean may be up to 3 degrees higher than air temperature at a max, but it could get up to 4, 5, 6, 7 degrees higher than air temperature. Whereas in the irrigated, the mean was never above 1. It was never above 1 degree above the air temperature and generally didn't exceed 2 degrees. So you can see for sure, under the same exact atmospheric conditions, the rain-fed maize is going to have the possibility of having a much higher air temperature during the day than the irrigated maize. So, again, then we looked at, well, can BPD explain any of this? And it's so long ago with this alfalfa had kind of implied no. What I'm showing you here in the upper left-hand corner is the rain-fed maize in 2012, what the canopy temperatures were minus the air temperatures as a function of BPD. You can see there's very little dependency, essentially none, on delta T's on BPD when you're in a rain-fed situation. On the right-hand corner, I don't know if you can see those yellow dots, the top dots. I mean, the interesting thing here was that the delta T's were actually the highest in the rain-fed maize at the beginning of canopy closure. Once day 190 to 195 is when we got the highest delta T's. And as the season progressed, those actually became lower. They were still higher than the irrigated, but seemed to get closer to 2 to 3 degrees C difference. The only thing I can think of, the explanation for that, because there was actually more rain at the beginning of the season, that's the lower right-hand graph, there was more rain at the beginning of the season and no rain after that. So unfortunately, this flux tower didn't have deeper soil moisture. But my hypothesis would be that you still had a lot of root growth going on, and at the beginning of the season, the surface was dry, surface soil was dry, but the corn had not yet tapped into deeper soil moisture, and that might have reduced it might have increased the ability to transpire later in the season, reducing those delta T's. Okay, that's the rain-fed maize. So the next step, so that's just kind of trying to look at, can we use vapor pressure deficit to get at delta T's? In probably a non-stressed maize, we can. And so one of the ideas, and when we think about climate change, would be and comparing different regions of the United States. In regions that have high vapor pressure deficits, the canopy temperature is going to be closer or even less than air temperature relative to areas that have higher vapor pressure deficits. And we're working on that right now because we're looking at irrigated maize in places like Nebraska and Kansas, as well as Missouri. And so in Missouri, where you would have higher vapor pressure, lower vapor pressure deficits, we would expect, if anything, to see a greater delta T relative to areas which have high vapor pressure deficits or low vapor pressure. Hopefully that makes sense. It's a little confusing because it goes from high above, the irrigated is rarely more than a degree above air temperature, and then it just gets more negative than air temperature. So the next thing we wanted to do was to predict the canopy conductance. Because we were going to then try and use the Penman-Matisse model to actually get at delta T's, all right, to model delta T's. And so what I did was take the irrigated maize. This is, I just inverted the, you know, Penman Monteith model to solve for canopy conductance. And this shows you on an hourly basis how the canopy conductance behaved over from in 2012. But it was similar in 2010 and 2011. So what you can see is by noon or 1 o'clock in the afternoon, 13:30, the canopy conductance starts decreasing, and it decreases really very rapidly throughout the afternoon. If the canopy conductance didn't do that, if we don't include that in our model, then the delta T's, the degree to which the canopy temperature is lower than the air temperature, would even be greater than we're actually measuring. So if you know, these stomates, they're closing, and if they didn't close, they would be dropping even further below air temperature, and the sensible heat transfer to the canopy would be even greater than we were actually measuring. However, again, I did a scatter plot here to see, can we get at what the canopy conductance is actually related to. We did have some surface soil measurements here, but they didn't work out very well. You can see a little bit of dependency on solar radiation, really not much dependency on vapor pressure deficit. That's that upper right-hand graph, or the lower left-hand one. So my own thinking is, in order to be able to model this behavior of the canopy, you're going to have to be able to have a good model of leaf water potential to be able to do this. This lower left-hand graph is just showing we could put together equations that get the general behavior of this system, but we can't really pick up some of the extremes. So I'm getting close to the end here, guys. This is for the irrigated maize with a pretty good model of canopy conductance, but not as much as we would like. On the x-axis are the predicted fluxes. In the upper left-hand corner, this is latent heat, and on the y is the measured. And so you can see this is hourly predictions of latent heat flux. We can do a pretty good job of predicting latent heat fluxes. In fact, you don't have to get the canopy conductance down really well to get at a pretty good latent heat flux. This predictive versus measured relationship. This has an R squared of about 0.94. But what we can't do as well is the sensible heat transfer, which is on the upper right hand. We can get a general, I'm showing you the red lines are the one-to-one plots. You can get the general behavior. But as you can see in the lower left-hand side, we're predicting more sensible heat loss than you're actually seeing from the canopy. That's because we're not shutting the stomates well enough. And so in the end, the bottom graph is looking at predicted delta T versus measured delta T. And again, you can see we can kind of get the boundaries of that, but there's still a lot of slop in that relationship. I think a lot of that is due to we need a better model of canopy conductance, but also there's a problem with, and this was talked about in this morning session, with getting at aerodynamic conductance. When the canopy is switching from being above air temperature to below air temperature, which it's doing sometime during the afternoon, essentially at some point the sensible heat transfer goes to zero, and then it becomes, as I said, toward the canopy, not away from it. And to model the aerodynamic conductance under all those conditions, you're going from very unstable to stable conditions. It's not that easy to do. So I think that's another area where we could really improve our understanding of canopy temperature, air temperature differences. So does getting T canopy right really matter? This shows you how different the killing degree days would be if we used air temperature to measure them. They'd be, in this case, in 2012 in Nebraska for this 190 to 240 day of the year period. Be 151 using air temperature. For the irrigated canopy, it would have been 91, and for the rain-fed, it would be 272. So if we use canopy temperature, the rain-fed canopy would actually have seen three times as much heat stress using KDD as an indicator than the irrigated, with the air temperature being somewhere in between. Okay, conclusion. So canopy of irrigated maize can be significantly lower than rain-fed maize under the same climate conditions. Probably most people will probably grasp that. But the canopy of irrigated maize is at a maximum shortly after noon, and though on average similar to air temperature, it can vary by plus or minus several degrees C, depending on vapor pressure deficit and net radiation. For irrigated maize, variability in the afternoon can be attributed to VPD and net rad. For rain-fed maize, that is water stress, the delta T is not a function of VPD, and the hourly canopy temperature is going to be difficult to predict without a good model of canopy conductance. But what we were saying is future studies of high temperature impacts on crop yield should use some measure or estimate of canopy temperature and not just use air temperature as a proxy for canopy temperature. Okay, thanks.
Dr. Reha had definitely exceeded the time, but it was an excellent talk, and I think there's a great implication of the findings that was presented over here in for the modeling group. At least I know that in our ET models, where we try to model the resistances, different resistances, aerodynamic crops, all the resistances, and it's difficult. I'm going to encourage a lot of questions for this presentation. So please, yes, sir.
Corn canopy is very deep, maybe 2 meters.
Right.
Then there's a canopy temperature. Where does it?
So that's a good question. So we're taking the canopy temperature from long wave emitted that's measured by the flux towers, which is what they use to get at ultimately that net radiation term that I had. So it's basically an integrated measurement of the temperature at the surface, but it would include any gaps in the canopy, and you could get into what's the field of vision, how much of the total corn field is it actually looking at. But those were some of the issues that were addressed this morning in by Danny Orr, looking at that.
If I'm allowed, I'd like to make a comment about using canopy temperature for simulations.
Yeah.
I think, unfortunately, what I predict is if we, even now, use canopy temperature with the current models, very likely we will see larger errors than use the reason is most, if not all, the function in the models were derived using air temperature instead of canopy true temperature.
Well, that's a good point.
Yes, I think in the future we need to
move more toward canopy.
But right now, the models are probably largely constructed using air temperature.
Good point.
I think Dr. Kimball, yes, you must ask the question.
Yeah.
What were you using to compute the aerodynamic resistance?
So two ways. That's a good question. One was I actually took the delta T's based on the canopy and air temperature and the sensible heat flux, the measured sensible heat flux, because you have those on an hourly basis or half-hourly basis with the flux towers. And those did pretty well, but there's you'd have to really clean up the data to use those. And so I also used a aerodynamic approach with a mu star and correcting for stability and instability, like they would do in Campbell and Norman. Yeah. So and definitely the canopy, the aerodynamic conductance is high during the day when the canopy is heating up, and is then suppressed as it cools down.